So as we continue our summer of life and thus relating aspects of Torah to life, we come to that which is a challenge, because in some ways we need to be jugglers when it comes to our lives. There are so many things that require our attention that we tend to focus on what is most pressing at the time, only to let something slip through the cracks. Our day-to-day lives can get consumed rather quickly. We only have 24 hours in a day. Approximately one-third to one-quarter of that day is already spoken for. If you do not require sleep, then better you than me. So we're talking 6 to 8 hours has already been allocated to sleep and therefore rest. Throw in meals because you need to eat. Subtract another hour, maybe two, if you spend time cooking rather than getting delivery. Thus, you really have 6 to 8 hours. Exercise it all. Subtract another hour. So now you are down to about 5 to 7 hours. And I forgot the 8 to 10 hours for work, for those of you who aren't retired. Thus, for those of you who aren't retired, have an additional blessing. You have more time. So technically, there's no excuse. So you're now down to 5 to 7 hours a day to devote to family, friends, chores, interests, and anything else. That's 35 to 49 hours during the week. Add in another 32 hours on the weekend, when you don't have to work, and now you're up to 67 to 81 hours. So we're talking a 5-day week to a 7-day week, a 5-day work week, as opposed to a 6-day work week. So that's 40 to 48% of a 168-hour work week. So anywhere from 40% almost up to 50%. So if you have so much time on your hands, why are we in such a rush and always seem like we don't accomplish anything if we have so much time? A minute here, a minute there, and your time quickly depletes. Of the 5 to 7 hours per day that is not directly spoken for, how well do you manage it? How well do you manage that time which you might call free time? I go through all of this because these numbers are actually not accurate. So I gave you false information. Because you don't actually have 168 hours in a week, you actually have 144. Thus, you now have between 43 and 57 hours to work with outside of all the requirements in your life. One day does not belong to us, but rather to Adonai. Yes, I am speaking of Shabbat. Hence, if the mystery was in the title, it's been clearly revealed. So thus, if this day does not belong to us, are we permitted to do anything we want? Let me ask you another question. Can you do more in less time? Ponder that for a minute. Time is a constant. It neither extends nor contracts, but its duration is fixed. A minute is still 60 seconds. An hour is still 60 minutes. You can either extend it or contract it. It is a constant. In the business world, doing more in less time is called productivity. Rob, I know you're aware of that. They say, how many parts can you get out of this machine? Can you get one more out? Faster, faster, cracking the whip. You are more productive with the same amount of resources available to you, in other words. If you have been here long enough, you know the origin of Shabbat, because I have shared it with you many times. Each Torah cycle, we encounter the very scriptures that reveal Shabbat to us and the dynamics surrounding it. For those of you who have not been with us so long, let me share this with you. And for those of you who have been here long enough, consider it a refresher. Considering it a prodding of, oh yeah, I remember that now. Adonai established order to the earth in 6 days. Some have concluded that time was not 6 literal days, but rather thousands of years in span, because the human mind could not possibly conceive everything was done in what we know today as a 24-hour period. Yet at the end of each day, Adonai expressed this. God saw everything that he had made, and indeed it was very good. This is the 6th day. So there was evening and there was morning, a 6th day. There was evening and there was morning. In each day, all 6 of them, the Hebrew words are the same. There was Erev and there was Boker, conveying that there is no distinction made between the duration of a day and the duration of a day then. Well, you might say the sun and the moon did not exist until the 4th day. Thus, how could there be a specific duration of time? Let me ask you this. Can the creator of time not keep track without the sun and the moon? The sun and the moon are for our benefit, not Adonai's. He doesn't need to look at the sun to say, oh, well, it's morning. Or, oh, well, the sun's setting, it's evening. He doesn't need to do that. Consider this, Genesis 1:14. God said, let there be lights in the dome of the sky to divide the day from the night. Let them be for signs, seasons, days, and years. For 2 days later, on the 6th day, we were created. Thus, within the narrative of creation, the purpose of the sun, the moon, were for us. Notice that neither existed in eternity past, nor will exist in eternity future. For the light of the world will come from Adonai. Revelation 22:5, night will no longer exist, so they will need neither the light of a lamp nor the light of the sun, because Adonai God will shine upon them, and they will reign as kings forever and ever. So this aspect of day and night will no longer be required upon the resumption of eternity. Thus, the duration of time is established by Adonai, not by external elements created by him. They are merely a means by which we can keep track of time. And so establishing time, Adonai establishes the week, 7 days. For after all his efforts, his work in establishing order from chaos, he rested. Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and everything in them. On the 7th day, God was finished with his work, which he had made. So he rested on the 7th day from all his work which he had made. God blessed the 7th day and separated it as holy. You have a 6-day block, then you have the 7th day that is set apart. Because on that day, God rested from all his work, which he had created so that it itself could produce. So what did he do on this day? Some say nothing, yet is that true? When you complete something you have been working on for some time, do you merely do nothing, or do you spend time experiencing what you have done? Would this not be the case with Adonai also? Admiring that which he had done, experiencing what he had done and accomplished. So Adonai has established a 7th day, and thus a 7-day week that we function within today. Yet it would not be until Moses, some 2,400 years since time began, when Adonai established Shabbat, that it would be mentioned again. I implore you to search your scriptures, because from Genesis 2:1, you will not see the word Shabbat again until Exodus 16. It will be when Adonai gives manna to the children of Israel in the desert, testing them regarding the instructions for gathering manna, that Shabbat is introduced to the world. For in Exodus 16, 4 and 5, Adonai said to Moses, "Here I will cause bread to rain down from the heavens for you. The people are to go out and gather a day's ration every day. By this I will test whether they will observe my Torah or not. On the sixth day, when they prepare what they have brought in, it will turn out to be twice as much as they gather on the other days. On the sixth day, the end of the week, so to speak, what's God doing? He's doing more with less. He's providing more with less time required." Verse 23, he told them, this is what Adonai has said, "Tomorrow is a holy Shabbat for Adonai. Bake what you want to bake. Boil what you want to boil, and whatever is left over, set aside and keep for the morning." They set it aside till morning as Moses had ordered, and it didn't rot or have worms, as manna would do for each daily provision. For they tried to store it, they tried to hoard it, so to speak, keeping in mind its expiration was Erev. Expiration was at Erev in the evening, basically. So no night snacks at the end. The next morning, it would have been rotted. So they set it aside till morning, as Adonai had ordered, and it did not rot or have worms. Moses said, "Today, eat that, because today is a Shabbat for Adonai. Today you won't find it in the field. Gather it 6 days, but on the seventh day is Shabbat. On that day, there won't be any." So God, in essence, has provided for them to where they gather once and they reap actually twice. The test was to see if the children would follow Adonai and therefore trust him through his instructions. This is the first time that Adonai reveals Shabbat as a day that is sanctified and set apart. There is no record of Shabbat being revealed to Abraham, Yitzhak, or Yaakov. Yet it would be Moses who would come to know this day and was instructed to share it with the children of Israel. For Shabbat was not just any day, but a day that would offer great significance. It was a gift that no other nation would receive because Adonai had a specific intent for it. For in Exodus 31:13, he says, "Tell the people of Israel, you are to observe my Shabbats. For this is a sign between me and you through all your generations, so that you will know that I am Adonai who sets you apart for me." So it's his day. And what does he do on his day? He sets us apart for him. It is a sign, a symbol that identifies the relationship between Adonai and Israel. It is no different than circumcision with Abraham, for it was a sign of the covenant between him and Adonai. For we read in Genesis 17:11, "You are to be circumcised of the flesh, of your foreskin. This will be the sign of the covenant between me and you." So both circumcision and Shabbat are part of Israel's covenant with Adonai. Yet in the new covenant, Gentiles are not required to become circumcised according to Acts 15 and elaborated by Shaul in 1 Corinthians 7. For in Acts 15:1, the council at Jerusalem, "But some men came down from Judah to Antioch and began teaching the brothers, you can't be saved unless you undergo circumcision in the manner prescribed by Moses." So some were saying that you could not come to Yeshua unless you became part of the covenant through Abraham and Moses, which required circumcision. Thus, Kepha offered his firsthand account of what Adonai was doing amongst the Gentiles in Acts 15:7. After a lengthy debate, Kepha got up and said to them, "Brothers, you yourselves know that a good while back God chose me from among you to be the one by whose mouth the goyim or the Gentiles should hear the message of the good news and come to trust. And God, who knows the heart, bore them witness by giving the Ruach HaKodesh to them, just as he did to us. That is, he made no distinction between us and them, but cleansed their heart by trust. So the benefit, the blessing of the Ruach HaKodesh is not based on circumcision, but it's based on trusting God. Whereby the council at Jerusalem concluded, therefore my opinion is that we should not put obstacles in the way of the goyim who are turning to God. Yet, pregnant pause. Yet no such gathering involved Shabbat. Yet when you look at how Adonai has established Shabbat within the nation of Israel, it is rather inclusive and direct. So there was no council at Jerusalem. Well, what are we going to do about Shabbat? Gentiles are coming in to experience Shabbat. Is this a burden on them? You have the aspect of Acts 15 with regards to circumcision. There is no such meeting, council meeting, regarding Shabbat. Yet it's rather inclusive and direct. It's referenced twice specifically in Exodus and Deuteronomy of Torah. Remember the day, Shabbat, to set it apart for God. You have 6 days to labor and do all your work. But on the seventh day is Shabbat for Adonai, your God. On it you are not to do any kind of work, not you, your son, your daughter, not your male or female slave, not your livestock, and not the foreigner staying with you who resides in your gates of your property. For in 6 days Adonai made heaven and earth, the sea and everything in it, but on the seventh day he rested. This is why Adonai blessed the seventh day, Shabbat, and separated it for himself. So it belongs to him. Thus it's his to give or not give. Deuteronomy 5, starting in verse 12. Remember, in verse 8 of Exodus, it says, remember the day. In Deuteronomy 5:12, it says, observe the day of Shabbat, to set it apart as holy, to Adonai your God, as Adonai your God ordered you to do. You have 6 days to do all your labor and do all your work, but on the seventh day is the Shabbat for Adonai your God. You are not to do any kind of work, not you, your son, your daughter, your male or female slave, not your ox, your donkey, or any of your livestock, and not the foreigner staying with you inside the gates of your property, so that your male and female slaves or servants can rest just as you do. And then verse 15, you are to remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and Adonai your God brought you out from there with a strong hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, Adonai your God has ordered you to keep the day of Shabbat. So in one aspect, Shabbat is to be remembered in its relation to creation, while in another, it is to be observed as a remembrance to the slavery the nation once experienced. In both instances, it is Adonai being honored as creator and redeemer. Thus, Shabbat has been set apart and given to the nation to worship Adonai. Consider the inclusive nature of this instruction. It pertains not only to those descended from Abraham, but those residing with the nation as well. These are not people who are merely passing through, but are those who have set their tent up, so to speak. They are dwelling in and with Israel. For this is a day of remembrance and observance. For Adonai reaffirms that Exodus 16:23 and that of a holy Shabbat. In Leviticus 23, work is to be done on 6 days, but the seventh day is a Shabbat of complete rest, a holy convocation. You're not to do any kind of work. It is Shabbat for Adonai. Notice nowhere does it say it's Shabbat for you. It's Shabbat for him. So going back to the premise of Acts 15 and the presumption by some that circumcision was conditional to redemption and Messiah, such a premise was not posed to Gentiles, for the basis for their decision pertaining to Gentiles involved Shabbat, based on the reasoning of the council. So Shabbat is an instrument for Gentiles, not an obstacle. What do I mean by this? Acts 15:19, therefore my opinion is that we should not put obstacles in the way of the goyim who are turning to God. Instead, we should write them a letter and telling them to abstain from things polluted by idols, from fornication, from what is strangled, and from blood. For from the earliest times, Moses has had in every city those who proclaim him, with his words being read in the synagogue, when? Every Shabbat. So Shabbat is not an obstacle, but it is an opportunity. The premise is that Gentiles will abstain from their previous pagan practices and learn what will take the place of their idolatry. Shabbat is further affirmed by the writer of Hebrews, who, writing to a Jewish audience, further establishes its authority and its relevance. In Hebrews chapter 4 and verse 1 and 2, therefore, let us be terrified of the possibility that even though the promise of entering his rest remains, any one of you might be judged to have fallen short of it. For good news has also been proclaimed to us, just as it was to them. But the message they heard didn't do them any good because those who heard did not combine it with trust. So who is the writer talking about when he talks about us and them? The us the writer of Hebrews is referring to is their current audience, while the them is answered a few verses back in Hebrews 3:15. Now where it says today, if you hear God's voice, don't harden your hearts as you did in the bitter quarrel. Who were the people who, after they heard, quarreled so bitterly? All those whom Moses brought out of Egypt. That's whom. That's who the those are. The them versus the us. Thus the us are those who did not enter the land the first time, immediately after the exodus from Egypt, and thus would not do so, for they would die in the wilderness because of their lack of trust in Adonai. So they did not enter the rest of the land. It would be the generation born in the wilderness that would enter the land, obtaining the promise of rest from their wanderings in the desert. For the writer of Hebrews continues in verse 3, for it is we who have trusted who enter the rest. It is just as he said, and in my anger I swore that they would not enter my rest, referring to the land. He swore this even though his works have been in existence since the founding of the universe. For there is a place where it is said concerning the seventh day, and God rested on the seventh day from all his works. And once more, our present text says, they will not enter his rest. Therefore, since it still remains for some to enter it, and those who received the good news earlier did not enter, the good news of the promised land versus the good news of Messiah, he again fixes a certain day, today saying through David, so long afterwards in the text already given, today if you hear God's voice, don't harden your hearts. Don't harden your hearts as your ancestors did once and did not trust in all that Adonai had promised. For the writer of Hebrews continues, for if Joshua had given them rest, God would not have spoken later of another day. So there remains a Shabbat keeping for God's people. For the one who has entered God's rest has also rested from his own works, as God did from his. Therefore, let us do our best to enter that rest, so that no one will fall short because of the same kind of disobedience. What does Shabbat do? It is, in essence, an inoculation to disobedience. It's a prevention. It's a means of prevention. Why? See, the Word of God is alive, verse 12. It is at work and is sharper than any double-edged sword. It cuts right through to where soul meets spirit and joints meet marrow. And it is quick to judge the inner reflections and attitudes of the heart. So the Word of God, Torah, as Adonai spoke directly with Moses, the prophets, where Adonai spoke through chosen messengers, and the New Covenant writings where Adonai is Yeshua and thus speaks with us directly, in no way nullifies Shabbat, but actually amplifies it as a foundational aspect for every believer in Messiah, Jew and Gentile. I have not even touched on Romans 11. And the wild olive branches become grafted into the olive tree that is Israel, and thus the Jewish people. So your homework, if you are still challenged by what I am sharing with you, read Romans 11. For just as there is one place where Adonai would put his name, and where Yeshua had promised to return, there is only one day out of seven that has been sanctified by Adonai, and thus set apart for him. Though not embraced in its fullness today by the body of Messiah, it will be. For each Shabbat, as part of Vishamru, you chant Isaiah 66:23, starting in verse 22. For just as the new heavens and the new earth that I am making will continue in my presence as Adonai, so will your descendants and your name continue. Every month on Rosh Hashanah and every week on Shabbat, everyone living will come to worship in my presence. Thus, the premise within church theology doesn't really make sense, nor even align with Scripture, including the New Covenant writings. Shabbat was neither changed nor done away with, for it has not changed. That is, the sanctity of it as established by Adonai during creation. For what does Adonai reveal about himself in Numbers 23:19? God is not a human who lies, or a mortal who changes his mind. When he says something, he will do it. When he makes a promise, he will fulfill it. Nothing changed here because God didn't change here. This should settle the matter for many of you. Yet, consider this. For the blessings associated in residing with Adonai as related to the land are really no different than the blessings of Messiah. For we read in Leviticus 26, you are not to make yourselves any idols, erect a carved statue or a standing stone, or place any carved stone anywhere in your land in order to bow down to it. I am Adonai your God. Keep my Shabbats and revere my sanctuary. I am Adonai. If you live by my regulations, observe my mitzvot and obey them, then I will provide you the rain you need in its season. The land will yield its produce, and the trees in the field will yield their fruit. Your threshing time will extend until the grape harvest. More from less. And your grape harvesting will extend to the time of sowing seed. You will eat as much food as you want and live securely, shalom, in the land. I will give you shalom in the land. You will lie down and sleep unafraid of anyone. I will rid the land of wild animals. The sword will not go through your land. You will pursue your enemies, and they will fall before your sword. Five of you will chase 100. 100 of you will chase 10,000. If anybody wants a word for that, it's known as exponential. Your enemies will fall before your sword. I will turn toward you, make you productive, increase your numbers, and uphold my covenant with you. You will eat all you want from last year's harvest and throw out what remains of the old and make room for the new. I will put my tabernacle among you, and I will not reject you. But I will walk among you and be your God, and you will be my people. I am Adonai, your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, so that you would not be their slaves. I have broken the bars of your yoke so that you can walk upright. So if God has broken the yoke of slavery, then the premise of doing what he requires of us is establishing another yoke. Again, it doesn't align, and I don't remember where this comes from, but I don't think it was Hal. Does not compute. I'm thinking it was Robbie, but I'm not sure.
Lost in space, yes.
Thus, what is one of the many promises in honoring Adonai, in honoring Yeshua, who is Lord of Shabbat, but that you will do more with less? Consider this a tithe of time. Though technically not a tenth, you are giving 1/7 to Adonai, for technically it already belongs to him. Do these verses then not apply? Malachi chapter 3. Look, I am sending my messenger to clear the way before me, and the Lord whom you seek will suddenly come to his temple. Yes, the messenger of the covenant in whom you take such delight. Look, here he comes, says Adonai. But who can endure the day when he comes? Who can stand when he appears? For he will be like a refiner's fire, like a soap maker's lye. He will sit, testing and purifying the silver. He will purify the sons of Levi, refining them like gold and silver, so that they can bring offerings to Adonai uprightly, correctly. Then the offering of Judah and Jerusalem will be pleasing to God, as it was in the days of old, in years gone by. Then I will approach you for judgment, and I will be quick to witness against sorcerers, adulterers, and perjurers, against those who take advantage of wage earners, widows, and orphans, against those who rob the foreigner of his rights, and don't fear me, says Adonai. But because I, Adonai, do not change, there's that constant aspect again, you sons of Yaakov will not be destroyed. Since the days of your forefathers, you have turned from my laws and have not kept them. Return to me, and I will return to you. Restoration of Israel, constant message throughout Torah and throughout the prophets. But you ask in respect to what are we supposed to return? Can a person rob God? Yet you rob me. But you ask, how have we robbed you? In tenths and voluntary contributions. Consider these verses as I have read, and as I say, a picture is worth a thousand words. I apologize for the people online. You might not be able to see this, and you might not be able to see this well either. This is a weekly schedule, a weekly day planner. Here you have scenario one, where people fit God into their schedule. So you have everything going on during the week. You meet friends on Sunday. You have meetings during the week. You have dinner with friends in the evening. You have meetings all day Friday. Then you block out a little bit of time for Shabbat. Then you have a family gathering afterwards. That's fitting God into your schedule. Whereas, here you have another example where Shabbat is blocked out. It's blocked out because it doesn't belong to you. Yet you can do everything else in the other 6 days. So the dynamic that I'm sharing with you, fitting Adonai into your busy schedule, thus you work him into your schedule. Fitting Shabbat in amongst other activities, what are you doing? You're making Shabbat common as opposed to holy. Scenario two, second mindset, establishing Adonai as your priority, and thus making your schedule around him, blocking out his time from all other functions and obligations. Two very different mindsets. Yet when you keep in mind Shabbat belongs to him and not us, it's his time and not our times, consider Psalm 92, which is known as Song for Shabbat. It is good to give thanks to Adonai and singing praises to your name, to tell in the morning about your grace and at night about your faithfulness, to the music of the 10-string harp and the lute with a melody sounding on a lyre, yes. For Adonai, what you do makes me happy. I take joy in what your hands have made, referring to the 6 days. How great are your deeds, Adonai. How very deep your thoughts. Stupid people can't know. Fools don't understand that when the wicked sprout like grass and all who do evil prosper, it is so that they can be eternally destroyed. While you, Adonai, are exalted forever. For your enemies, Adonai, your enemies will perish. All evildoers will be scattered. But you have given me the strength of a wild bull. You anoint me with fresh olive oil. My eyes have gazed with pleasure on my enemies' ruin. My ears have delighted in the fall of my foes. The righteous will flourish like a palm tree. They will grow like a cedar in the Lebanon. Planted in the house of Adonai, they will flourish in the courtyards of our God. Even in old age, they will be vigorous, still full of sap, still bearing fruit, proclaiming that Adonai is upright, my rock in whom is no wrong. So this song is sung on Shabbat. Why? Because it embraces the very promises that God has established. So the title of this sermon was Life, Balance, and Torah. Really haven't talked much about how to establish balance, other than you can do more with less by giving what belongs to God. So balance comes not by proportionality, but by priority. There's a saying, work smarter, not harder. Thus, is smarter not honoring God first with your time, and not your voluntary time, that is, but the time that already belongs to him? Anything else you give him beyond Shabbat is a true offering. Is this not the same principle of the tithe and giving of your first fruits? Don't take my word for it. Do what he says and see what the results are. I believe you will be surprised. Furthermore, I believe you will be blessed, because those who follow God are truly not disappointed, for he meets their needs. We're singing, We Delight in Your Shabbat, and one of the verses talked about the lilies of the field from Mark chapter 6. He provides for the lilies of the fields. He provides for the birds of the air. They neither reap nor sow. Yet where is your delight? It shouldn't be in the day itself, but whom the day belongs to. And we tend to get that mixed up, because in some circles of the body of Messiah, Shabbat has become an idol. It has become more important than anything else. It is priority, it is important. Yet when you set Shabbat up as an idol, you're in essence worshiping it and not the one who established it. And there's a difference, there's a distinction, so be careful. We come here not out of obligation, we come here out of desire. God set this day apart, it belongs to him. Are we robbing from God when we do something else on this day? I'm the messenger here. You can shoot me. I didn't bring any stones. You could throw them at me if you want. But know this, God's word doesn't change because he said it doesn't. When he makes his mind up, he writes it in stone. More permanent than ink. So keep these things in mind, that Shabbat is where your true balance can come from. Like I said, test him. Refrain on the seventh day and see how your time expands. See how you can do more or you're more productive in less time. Worship smarter, not harder. So if everybody would please rise.